Welcome to Portia Pattern with Bracken Helms, the show where we hear Bracken and his distinguished guests from the Portia community patter on about Porsches and all things automotive. Portia Pattern is sponsored by Circuit 64. Circuit 64 creates authentic automotive apparel made for like-minded automotive enthusiasts. The links for Circuit 64 are in the show notes. Okay, let's get to it.
Tony Callis, part one. All right, I first met Tony Callis at the swap meet, the 356 or all Porsche swap meet. I'm not even sure what it's called. I do it every year. It's the one that comes right after the lit show, the LA lit show. So anyway, we were talking, and that's when we first started talking about doing an interview. So we've been going back and forth. I didn't want to put pressure on him just whenever he was ready. But a lot of times he's brought it up to me, like at Luftacolt, he approached me, when are we going to do this interview? So it's just kind of been the fact that he's in Southern California and I'm in Northern California. I couldn't just shoot over after work, and I wasn't trying to pressure him whenever he was ready. Let's just do it. I want it to be like at a good time for both of us. Unfortunately, even after we finally set it up and we'd been talking about it for a while, the day I showed up, he had some unexpected things come up, which caused a little bit of anxiety and kind of put my time under pressure a little bit. But I've been wanting, this is one I've been excited about when I got there. You know, we know that Tony's brilliant when it comes to engineering, but he's equally intelligent, which you normally think about engineers as kind of more like fact-based, more, I don't know how you say it, robotic-y, like they need stuff proven. But he's super intelligent when it comes to like behavioral science types of things. And so I think that's where we kind of vibed. I mean, I'm not so engineer based, but we were vibing a lot. I feel like with the, we kind of saw a lot of things the same way. In this one, we talk about like some of his growing up. At the end, we also kind of get into the 911R, specifically, obviously, the one that set the record at Monza, which is pretty cool because there was a break in the interview. So I was just kind of hanging out at the shop, and behind like a clear car cover was the 911R. I don't know. It was just kind of weird because you know the whole history behind it. And you're also kind of thinking, you know, if just the average person walked by this shop right now, they would, with all these different cars, nothing would really stick out. So it was just kind of weird that such a memorable and famous car was just kind of sitting there under a car cover. I mean, you could still see it. It's like a clear car cover. But no one would ever think anything of it with all these other cars there, and it's just sitting there. I don't know. It just kind of added another mystique to it. Anyway, here's part one of Tony Callis. What is Callis Rennsport?
Most people that haven't met me and don't know my last name, I explained that I wanted my last name in the company name to show how I'm proud and that it means something to me and that I stand behind it. Originally, growing up, my father started a Porsche shop in Austin, and he had a certain name. And then in 75, he moved to another location and changed the name to Rennsport Porsche Works. And Rennsport in German can mean race sport, but it can go to track and field for running.
Okay.
To run a car, to run and run sport. Rennsport is like race sport, the sport of racing. And so I took my father's shop's name of Rennsport, added Callis, and I put Callis Rennsport, and that's where it came about. It's a long story from when I was about 12 years old.
And so what would you describe, like, what would you describe you did?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I have this thing that it's upset a lot of people that have been my partners in life, you know, a lot of girlfriends and my wife and fiancés and people that have been with me, that I explain myself as a mechanic. And so people go, what do you do? And I say, I'm a mechanic. I don't want to say I set people up, but I like to put them into a position where I like to see what they say. Because a lot of people look down on mechanics and they say, oh, well, that's really nice. You know, I have a check engine light on my Miata or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Miata is a cool race car. But it's something that I've always done. I don't like to be ostentatious or brag. And I don't want to sit there and just try to explain everything I've done in my life. But in the end, I just say, oh, I'm a mechanic. And I think in a way, it's like a psychology test for people.
I mean, I don't want to get too sidetracked, but just barely at Rennsport Reunion, the guy that worked on my 74 Targa. So at Rennsport Reunion, I was with him and Jerry Woods, and we were talking about how society just pushes for, oh, go to college, go to college, yeah. go to college. No one wants to learn trades anymore. Like, there's just some sort of negativity around trades now.
Mojo that kind of goes around with it, or whatever you want to call it. There's a lot to this. I knew right away from when I was young. I'll just kind of go into it a little bit. So when I was, say, roughly 12 years old, I was in the fifth grade. I was building models for other kids and charging them probably a really menial fee, and felt like a business. And I looked at the age of my father. And, you know, when you're 12, you don't know what 30 is. You don't know what 25 is. You don't know what 35. You just know it's super old. And so at 12 years old, I said, okay, I looked at my dad and what he was doing, and I made a goal that I'm going to open my own business by the time I'm 30. And I just set that goal, and I just followed that through my life until I was getting to 28. And I said, okay, I'm going to have to open a business. This is just going to happen. This is what I'm going to have to do. And it got very difficult because in 89 and a half, when the 964, you know, the 911 came out, that was a change in our lives. That car was so advanced. It was like the space shuttle.
Right.
And in the end, it probably was, with the amount of computers and the technology it has in it. And Porsche released it with the all-wheel drive, right?
Right.
The lightweight flywheel, all kinds of neat stuff, but mainly sequential fuel injection, where it hits per injector instead of batch fire or constant injection where it fires all injectors at the same time. This was a very, very intelligent car. So for me to open a business in 92, it was difficult to start out with the computer I had to buy that called it the Bosch Hammer, or they still do, and to interrogate that car and to know, because, yeah, we weren't getting that many of them at the time, but I did get them, and I had to deal with that alone. Now, if you look at people today and they go, mechanics, and they go, oh, no, that's not a big deal, or technicians, as they say, it was. It really was from where we stood. Yeah, very. Oh, well, the question on that was, when I was 12, right, and deciding what to do, to me, school was not really where I needed to be. It was working on the cars, and it's just always that way from that point in my life. I'm not saying I wasn't worthy or that I didn't need it. I've self-studied so much since I left high school. And I've gone to our local community college, El Camino, and I've taken physics and English and you name it. And I even went further in English. I love writing and I love art. And so, yeah, there you go. I hope that answers some of it with the college. But for me, it wasn't the necessary.
What attracted you to Porsche?
There is no answer to that because I don't know anything different. In fact, I had a revelation at a certain time in my life, probably just after high school or between 13 and 16, I don't know, years old, where I didn't realize what Porsches were. I had no idea there was some status included and they were super special and whatnot, until kids would ask me, oh, how do you have that? You know, as we all matured at that point, you started to realize what money meant and what you should have and whatnot, because there's a lot of that goes on in life, especially in Texas, where I grew up in Austin. For me, I started to realize, wait a minute, this is a unique car. So when I don't remember when I was introduced to Porsches, my dad drove them from when I was the youngest age. And my father, before I was born, well, shortly after I was born, was a district service rep at Porsche. So I don't know anything different. It's like if you're born on the moon and somebody says, well, isn't the moon different? And no, I don't know what you mean. And we did eventually, we were surrounded by other cars. By the age of 14 to 15, I went to work at a bug shop in Sealy, Texas. We worked on everything there. It was kind of like getting kicked out of the nest. And I saw what it was like. I worked on an old 88, pulled the heads off that. And all of this was so special to me, just being able to touch wrenches and work on cars. But still, I saw the difference.
Yeah. So I guess the next thing we could maybe skip on. How long have you been in the business?
Well, again,
you kind of started.
I don't know anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. My father had a Porsche shop when I was such a young age, you know, 7. He started his own shop, something like that. And so if it was 1970, it was 7 because before my birthday in Austin, you got to realize I hung around that shop. I mean, after school, I'd be there every day, and I would be on a creeper on my hands, just rolling around on the floor. I mean, even if I didn't work on the cars, I was just hanging out there. So I don't know anything else. 1979, my father's like, hey, you need to go work for somebody. You need to check something else out. And this was if I mention different things like Don's Bookshop and Sealy, you have to realize I kind of moved around a little bit, seeing where I wanted and where I was at and where my heart was and just learning different things. So my father got me a job at a Porsche dealership called North Freeway. It was a brand new dealer in Houston. We used to drive there together. It was really fun. If you imagine spending that time with your father in a car for an hour and a half, usually a Porsche, usually a 911, of course. And so I started working in a dealership, and the very first car they gave me, well, first they put me on a couple of Audis because they were, it was the Audi period, right? And then they gave me a 924 turbo to replace the turbo one. I was in shock. Now you have to put yourself in that period of time where you do have cameras, but you don't have instant developing. You know, 1 hour developing didn't come until later on. So if you wanted to wait a week or two for the photos to come out, I didn't have my own black room or anything, dark room to do this.
Right.
So what I'm getting at is nowadays you take photos of everything you do, right? You document everything you do, you take photos, and you can line it all out. It makes it so much easier.
Right.
We didn't have photos like that back then. And so I was in shock that this turbo was so buried for me, such a big job. But I got through it and I did it. And I think it kind of set me up for my career, right? For where I'm at with at being advanced level diagnostician and everything. But you know what? I've been looking a lot lately at, I've been kind of collecting nature photos of animals like tigers and lions. And you know, when an animal is born, they don't have anything other than their instinct and what their mother shows them, usually what they learn from their parents. And I guess that's kind of what happened, right? I mean, my father took me, showed me the ropes. I saw a lot of bad things. I saw a lot of good things, but it was still, it was a mecca. You know, that's, wow, look at this place.
How has your business evolved or changed?
Well, you know what? I think if you talk to anybody in this business, I got a call this morning from somebody from Miami, and they're just thinking about selling. They're like, Tony, this business has changed so much. It's gone from dealing with engineers and really unique people that wanted a unique car to pretty much anybody owns a Porsche, you know. And I hate to say it's just money for a lot of people, or it's just status. The people that owned them back then were really different. They were eccentric. And that's kind of how I learned the word. My father was like, oh, well, this person's really eccentric. And most of them are, you know, whether it's a professor or an engineer. Engineers always were difficult back in the day because they would argue with you about how is this possible that this broke this way. And you're like, you know what? I can go into it, but I need to finish this car and I need to move on to the, I've got to pay my rent. I got into dealing with those engineers and working with them and understanding, well, you're right. This shouldn't have cracked or broken or failed the way it did. So we didn't have FEA back then in computer finite element analysis. We learned by looking at it, and there were engineers we could talk to that understood failure analysis. So,
I mean, yeah, it's definitely like back in the day, it was a sacrifice. It was a Porsche was a second car, or if you drove it every day, you were pretty hardcore. But mostly it was like a secondary car where you had to have extra money. I mean, I know people get loans and stuff now, but cars were paid off back then. Mm-hmm. And so like to have a secondary car that was a Porsche, it was a conscious decision. It was a kind of a sacrifice, even if you were pretty wealthy. Whereas now it's just kind of like, well, I can buy the SUV and then I go to PCA and PCA say, well, you only have the SUV. So now I got an ego trip. So then I go buy the sports car. Are these people really in it for Porsche? Or, you know, it's changed. It's big.
No, they don't all have the heart like Seinfeld does. And you have to realize also in the 70s, things were different. There weren't really credit cards.
Right.
I mean, sure, you could say they were credit cards, but really not. People didn't finance cars. And if they did, it was usually from the lot that sold the car and you bought it there and paid for it there, et cetera. So you're right.
What do you like about your job?
This is interesting because this is everything I know. This is everything I love. It may come as a surprise because of all the speaking engagements, but I am not a people person as much. I'm pretty much an introvert. And so, yeah, the other day I was in Chicago speaking to 125 Porsche Club owners, the Midwest 356 group. And people are always shocked to hear that because of what I say when I'm standing up on the stage. But the cars are what I connect with. I love looking, touching a car. And that was the problem with owning the business. I got to where I worked myself out of a position and I'm sitting in an office and that's not me.
Right. So next question's irrelevant. You were born into it. First ride in a Porsche. which was just,
who knows.
In your opinion, what is the most exciting car you have dealt with?
So besides the most exciting car I've dealt with, let's jump back just for a second in the first ride in a Porsche. I can tell you the nightmares I've had, you know, because we drove from, my father drove a 356 with my mom in the front and my sister and I in the back to California and back, because we moved to California and we came back to Texas and we lived in San Clemente for a year or something. So for me, it was more of a nightmare in that back seat. I had strange nightmares about that. Okay, so what is the most, what type of car you said?
What is the most exciting car you have dealt with or been associated with?
You know what? I've gotten to a point in my career. So that would be a good question when you're young. Of course, you don't have the number of cars. You can say, oh, well, there's this and that and this and that, and then I can pick one of them. So your experience isn't there and your wisdom isn't there. But I've gotten to where I just love the basics, a lot of them. The ones I don't care for are the ones that are really just under-maintained because they're just so difficult and there's so much. You're like, oh my gosh, it's bad enough having ADD than to get up to a car and go, holy crap, where do I start? And then, you know, you start with the safety items. And when that's overwhelming, I don't know what to tell you. But the most special car, I don't know how to explain this, but cars have... I don't want to say they have a soul because that'll throw people off and they won't understand and they'll just criticize my spiritual identity. But there's something to them. There's a character there, and there are cars that feel different than others. If you stand there long enough, you'll pick up on things. You need to feel that thin slicing, what's in your gut and what are you feeling from the car, because your subconscious is picking up on a lot of things. I'm not saying you're picking up on the character or the soul of the car, but you're picking up on things and you need to trust your intuition and your gut. I went back to find the oldest Porsche I could buy, and I ended up buying a 52 Beetle because it's in the family and I couldn't afford the 52 Porsche. So I bought the Beetle. To me, it's where was Dr. Porsche at? Where was his head at the time? Ferdinand's head, when he was designing this car. I enjoy driving my bug. Just an old, you know, just the origins of this car. I should have, the only regret I have at this point is I should have purchased the cable brake, non-synchronized gearbox car instead of this one. This has synchronizers in the gearbox and it's got hydraulic brakes. But
what year is it?
52.
It's pretty early. Split?
Yeah, it's a Zwitter split. Okay. It's a unique in-between year, right?
Okay. That's cool. What color is it?
It's a green.
Okay.
Light green.
So what do you think, we kind of got into this, but like, what do you think is like the most exciting or coolest car you've been associated with?
There's no car more important than the 911R, the Monza Record Run car. Yes, we're also restoring number 19. That car was really a mess because of a crash in Japan years ago. But this car, this Monza car, is probably, and I hate to put a dollar value onto it, but I'll just say it's the most historically important automobile we've ever really had. We've had 904s, we've had 959s, we've had Carrera GTs, you name it, unique Butlers and everything, but that R kind of trumps everything.
What do you mean the 19 car?
Well, there's, if you look at 911Rs, there's four prototypes.
Oh, okay.
Built off the S's.
Right.
And then there's 20 production 911Rs. And we've restored number one, 001. And now we're restoring 019. It's critical also in the history of Porsche. It's important. But nothing like number one, because the factory used it as running that record run. The factory did this. And they realized the history behind that car. And they've made a lot of efforts in promoting the newer cars off of that. So,
yeah, I mean, how did they finally get the right number of 911Rs? Because the numbers were all over the planet till I read that 000. And I'm sure they got their information from maybe Randy or someone. But yeah, before I read that 000 magazine, I had like, oh, there's 70 of them out there. Oh, there's three. And it's like, they were all over the place.
Randy has a really funny statement. Randy Leffingwell, when he says, and you know, he's quite the historian.
Right.
Primarily Porsche. when he goes, there's 120 of the original 20 built still remaining. There's still 120 are still remaining because there's been so many copies of them. And a lot of people have tried to copy them. And I got to tell you, with most of them I see, I can spot them from 20 feet. That is not, it's not an R. But, you know, that's okay. People have their own thing. But if you really try to copy it and try to cross it over as the real deal, we can tell pretty much. I mean, the factory asks me all these questions about, well, you know, what happened here? Because they don't really know. Not everything is in the Kardex and in the archives.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, comment, like, and share with your friends. Feel free to send questions or suggestions to the email in the description of the show. Special thanks to our sponsor, Circuit 64. Goodbye for now. We hope we can get together again for our next episode. Now get out there and enjoy the cars and the people.